This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're here with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan and Noel Lim. Now, according to Minister in the Prime Minister's Department for Economy, Dato Sri Mustapha Mohamed, the 12th Malaysia Plan will be tabled once Parliament reconvenes. He said the plan is constantly updated in terms of numbers and strategies and takes into account the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic.
The Economic Planning Unit had finalised the 12th Malaysia Plan 2021 to 2025 after having held engagement sessions to gain feedback from stakeholders. So what can we expect from the plan when it finally gets tabled? And what should be its focus and the key issues it needs to address, considering the state of the economy?
For some insight into this, we have on the line with us this morning, Tricia Yeo, CEO of the Institute of Democracy and Economic Affairs, better known as IDEAS. Good morning, Tricia. Thanks for joining us today. Now, before we get into the 12th Malaysia Plan, can you talk to us about the 11th Malaysia Plan first? Was it successful in its targets and what were perhaps some of its highlights?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me. So, yes, I think everyone's looking forward to the 12th Malaysia Plan, but importantly, we do need to look back in the past. So basically, the 11th Malaysian Plan was launched in 2015. And as all Malaysia plans, they span 5 years. So this one was between 2016 to 2020, well, 2015 to 2020. And it had six strategic thrusts. I think the key thing to take away from the 11th Malaysia Plan is that the targets were not able to be met simply because of what happened in 2020. So the pandemic and the economic crisis resulting from that was the main reason why the targets were not able to be achieved. So for example, the 11th Malaysia Plan had a target GDP growth of between 4.5 to 5.5% per annum. And of course, as we know, just before 2020, in 2019, we met maybe about 4.3%. We had actual GDP growth then. And of course, last year, it's just plummeted negative 5.6%. And then another example would be the target mean monthly household income in the plan was to achieve by 2020, 8,960 ringgit. And the actual mean monthly household income achieved in 2019 was 7,901 ringgit. So the 2020 data for some of this is not yet available, but I think the main point here is that the 2020 crisis has not helped in improving the figures to reach the target. So I suppose if one were to analyze it, it would be a failure. However, I think this is not something that could have been expected or predicted in any way. I think there are other sort of thoughts about the 11th Malaysia Plan, and I think thoughts about five-year plans more generally, which I can get into perhaps later on in the interview.
Well, in the past working papers on the 12th Malaysia Plan, there were three key initiatives, which were economic empowerment, environment, sustainability, and social re-engineering. Of course, the devil is in the details, and we'll have to see the actual plan, the 12th Malaysia Plan. But in the meantime, is this adequate in light of COVID-19, and what more would you like to see?
I think the key themes are relevant still. I mean, no matter what, and of course, given the pandemic, it's even more important that we talk about economic empowerment and environmental sustainability, social re-engineering. I have a little bit of a problem with that, but I think in general, I think the theme is trying to address the thing about, you know, poverty and inequality and empowerment. And social protection. So in that sense, the public policy angle of it is fine. But I think, the 12th Malaysia Plan, the reason it's been delayed for so long for a number of reasons, right? So there was a change in government. It was supposed to have been rolled out previously under the PH government. And of course, it was meant to be part of the larger, broader theme of the Shared Prosperity Vision 2030. And then, of course, with the pandemic now, a lot of things have had to change. So, I do think that the government would have taken these recent factors into consideration since, you know, COVID-19 has just changed so many things. And I think one thing that's also not being talked about is how we should be coming up with an alternative crisis time poverty line income. So I do think that, you know, poverty rates have changed drastically, and the pandemic is reason enough for us to consider that the conditions of poverty that we're looking at are not the same ones that we were looking at prior to that. So, yes, these three themes are important. So under economic empowerment, I think definitely post-pandemic, we have to look at how to empower SMEs even more, whether trade recovery can take place. In environmental sustainability, looking at whether the rural parts of the country would have more access to water and electricity, and maybe this was affected even worse by the pandemic. And then, of course, looking into moving away from fossil fuel into renewable energy. So I think all of these things still are very imperative to get into, but one needs to understand that the rapidly changing dynamics of the economy and of our, social environment as well.
You mentioned you had issues with social re-engineering. Could you briefly elaborate on that?
I think the thing that comes to mind when we think of social re-engineering is what happened under the new economic policy that was launched under the second Malaysia Plan in 1971. And, what happened then, of course, was the very noble objective, but it's the very noble twin objective of ensuring that poverty would be alleviated, the poverty would be alleviated, not looking at race. So that was a very good noble objective. But the second one, which was actually to re-engineer and ensure that race would not be associated with the kinds of job functions that they were at that point in time. So it would then change completely, right, the way the social economy and the political economy would look. So I think I understand the importance of that. But the problem with doing this from a very top-down perspective is that sometimes it does not take into account the market dynamics and how firms need to react in a more fluid manner in order to meet the demands of the day. Having said that, I think some re-engineering is important. And in fact, it has been very successful in the past, right? So we have been, over the last 40 years, been able to successfully elevate the professional qualifications of an entire group and community of people, such that today we have so many professional doctors and lawyers and engineers who are Malay. So in one sense, that has helped. But I think sometimes there are unintended consequences for economic policies that are set by the government. So, for example, when you do have, say, race-based preferential affirmative action policy, what that does sometimes is that because of that, the elite within that particular group tend to benefit as opposed to someone within that community, but in the B40 household instead. So I think a lot of people have talked about this thing about moving from race-based to needs-based. And I do express preference for that kind of needs-based assistance. However, I also think that it's very important that we look at it from sector by sector. So it's not enough to just say with a sweeping arm that we want to replace everything with needs-based. We need to look at it sector, like higher education. Okay, what are the kinds of changes that need to be done there? Employment. What are the changes there? And then a procurement, what are the changes that need to be done there? So I think it's really time that we take a more analytical and nuanced approach into this whole affirmative action policy debate.
So Tricia, with everything we've discussed so far, all right, there are many pillars and many concerns that need to be addressed with the 12th Malaysia Plan or just with policy in general. What should be the main focus for the 12th Malaysia Plan? One pillar that really needs to be emphasized?
I think the 12th Malaysia Plan really needs to look at how we are going to address economic competitiveness. There are many things that need to be done in addressing the competitiveness. So you're talking about being able to create an appropriate ecosystem, whether it's in the digital space, whether it's in, deregulation and opening up of certain things that are still very, very cumbersome for, say, SMEs, and for them to conduct their businesses in a very effective and efficient manner. I think the government really needs to address these. I mean, I haven't even started talking about the institutional reforms that are needed to addressing governance problems, whether it's corruption or delays in getting approvals through. I think this is where Malaysia needs to shine again. Bear in mind that we have a lot of competitive neighbors in the region, and we keep saying, we keep talking about it as if they haven't yet caught up, but they have. they have. So if we don't do anything on that front, we are actually the ones that are sliding behind.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Tricia. That was Tricia Yeo, CEO of the Institute of Democracy and Economic Affairs, with her thoughts on the 12th Malaysia Plan. And she emphasised their economic flexibility as well as competition, especially in the face of other competitors in the region.
Yes, I think she also sort of briefly alluded to the fact about governance, mm-hmm. which is so important. And that was like that one simple thing that we need to do, right? And it mirrors our poll, what our poll respondents want.
Yes, fantastic, right? We asked you, what should be the top priority of the 12th Malaysia Plan? 31% said swift economic recovery, 11% said high productivity jobs, 11% said digitalization, 47% said better governance. And some of the comments I've seen here are basically what basically boils down to, what does the rest matter if we don't have governance in place to make sure that it doesn't that these things get followed through on?
Absolutely. So do continue to let us know what you think as well on the poll. You can find it on the Twitter account at BFM Radio. But right now we're about to head into the 8 o'clock news bulletin. And after that, we're having the breakfast grill, where Wong Xiaoning will be speaking with Dr. Kelvin Low, Managing Director and CEO of IHH Healthcare. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.